Buenos dias, happy to see ya. This is Malas Noticias, where our news is muy, muy mala. At the top of today's headlines, the reviews are in. Marihuaneta is hot, hot, hot. According to Liddy listeners across the land, the podcast for potheads was created and hosted by Mala Munoz, the fast-talking dame rumored to be the alleged long-lost niece of the illustrious Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong. More on her later. But first, Toucan Carlton is in a tizzy, as white people across the nation seem to be evaporating into thin air, like 2% milk in a California heat wave, never to be seen or heard from again. Many now asking, what will we do without whitey? As many have pointed out, without the whites, who will gentrify our neighborhoods, call the cops on children at play, and capitalize on legal cannabis after decades of white supremacy and the war on drogas? Well, marihuaneras, in order to cope with the earth-shattering news of today, we here at Malas Noticias recommend you select a heavy indica, sit back, light up, and enjoy the fucking show. This has been Malas Noticias, where our news is muy, muy mala. And now, for the main event.
She's a depressed 20-something with a college degree, who copes with life by smoking too much weed, dodging cochinos as she rolls down the street.
Oye, mami, I wanna be your dog.
Aim higher, pendejo.
She's la marihuanera, as seen on IG.
That's me.
Mari, 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 marihuanera.
Welcome to episode 5. This is Marihuaneta, a podcast for potheads. I am your most obedient, subservient, and docile host, Mala Munoz, and I am smoking a strong sativa out of my mota glass bong, per usual. I like to keep this bad boy right next to me when I'm recording, and I'm just fucking taking bong rips throughout my recording sessions, my writing sessions, and it's keeping me going. It's almost 2 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling energized. I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling creative, and I'm feeling fucking lit. So I hope you already are in the process of lighting up and you're enjoying the ride, because we have a beautiful episode today. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm inviting an incredible guest onto the show, Rue Johnson, who is an icon in her own right in the cannabis industry, in the music industry, as a journalist. So you can look forward to a really informative, funny, just, I fucking love this conversation. I love this interview. Rue is amazing. So please stick around to the end of the episode, because you want to hear all of it. You're really going to want to hear every single second of this episode. But before we get to that, there is some business that I would like to address. I was recently described as formidable by Gabe Chavran of LA Taco. And you know what? I agree. I love this fucking word. I have been searching for this word. You know when people ask, like, oh, how would your friends describe you, and you're always like, oh, like, my friends will describe me as, like, you know, generous and kind and No. No. I want to be described as formidable. Etch that shit onto my fucking tombstone. Here lies Mala. Formidable. All caps. Period. That's it. That's it. None of the other details are going to matter at the end of it all. That's what I want all the reviews to say. Formidable. And funny. Balance. So the reason why Gabe Chevron described me that way was because I was in episode 10 of Wild, the new hit podcast by Eric Galindo and Elias Studios. This is not a paid ad. This is not a shameless plug either, because I am incapable of feeling shame. I'm just talking about myself and my recent accomplishments. All right. I was cast to be the narrator on episode 10 of Wild from Elias Studios because she's now a voice actress. This was my first paid voice acting gig, and I play the role of narrator / Blanca, the family dog. And it was a great time. I loved it. It's a very fun episode. You can tune in across streaming platforms. Go and let them know how much you love the podcast. Listen to the show from episode 1. Listen all the way through, because it really is a very fun podcast. And I like it as a body of work in and of itself. I think it's a really great listen. It's very unique. I'm excited to be part of it. So thank you, Eric and Elias, for having me. Hire us for more stuff. Keep giving us work, please. Because I'm a full-time indie podcaster, so you can only imagine how bills get paid. We're saving it for the memoirs. You guys will read about it in the memoirs. Just know we're hustling. There's so much that I want to talk about, but I also want to get straight to the interview with Rue. But I want to leave you guys with some thoughts. Upon the Olympics ending, I couldn't help but think, like, I wish they had shown more race walking, more speed walking. I don't know if you guys have ever seen, like, competitive race walking. It is an event within track and field, and the track is always my favorite event to watch at the Olympics. I mean, it's the original Olympiad. It's the original Olympics, like the triathlons and running and steeplechase and fucking discus throwing and hammer throwing and pole vaulting. And you know what I mean? Like, these endurance and strength events were the original Olympics. And I would like to also say probably gymnastics. I don't fucking know. I'm just saying things that I believe to be true. So if there's going to be a sport in the Olympics, I'm trying to watch the fucking track. And I used to run track as a kid, and as a family, we all ran track, and we were at meets and cross country for years, and it was a whole fucking thing, right? And so there was a period of time where actually we competed in the race walk. We were race walking. We were speed walking at a competitive level as kids. And I actually went to the Junior Olympics for competitive race walking, and I competed, and I came in like number 6, like in the country at that time, as like a whatever grade I was in, 7th grade or some shit. So like, very strange, very bizarre turn of events. However, I find that as an adult woman in Los Angeles, speed walking comes in handy all the time, because I'm constantly like briskly walking away from some man, like not running necessarily, because it has to really be very serious to break out into a run, into a sprint, if you think about it, right? We're in heels, we're in dresses, you know, I'm in my little fucking hoochie outfits, like out and about, you know, I'm like cute as shit, like all the time. Well, not all the time. I'm usually like a little bit chunk luda when I'm walking my dog, but that's neither here nor there. It's fine. But if I'm like in the world, right, I'm probably wearing something cute. So I'm not like just breaking, I'm not wearing a bra. I'm not just breaking out into a sprint in the middle of the day and in the middle of the sidewalk. There's too much going on. But a fast walk, a speed walk, a trot practically, yes. But with both of my feet are still on the ground. And see, that's one of the central rules of speed walking, of race walking, is both of your feet have to have one foot on the ground at all times. And when you're running, there's moments where you're like, both of your feet are up in the air. You're like elevated, technically. You're kind of flying a little bit. So in the race walking, one foot always has to be on the ground. So it comes in handy as an adult woman, because there's always men fucking pressing me and bothering me, and I'm like, let me get away from this fool, because I know he's about to ask me what I'm mixed with. I just know it. I feel it. I see it in his eyes. He's about to ask me if I'm Aztec and what tribe I descend from. He's gonna ask me what I'm mixed with and where my people are from without fail, right? I also feel like when I'm walking my dog, I'm usually like really avoiding a series of attempted kidnappings because some of the street harassment is a little severe. Like, I was walking Papas. I put this on my Instagram once, but you know, whatever. If you don't, like, religiously study every single one of my posts at @Mala_Munoz, what are you doing? But it's fine. I posted this on my Instagram, but a couple months ago, it was within the pandemic, I was out walking Papas, right? And, of course, my dog likes to shit in segments, so he will poop multiple times throughout our walk. That's just his way. That's just what he likes to do. So I already have like a little doggy bag full of shit in my hand and I'm walking him and I'm like hat on, sunglasses on, mask on. This is one of those moments where I was chunkluda. I was just walking my dog, you know? And so we're walking. And then this man in like a little fucking Toyota Corolla, because Latinos who street harass love to street harass in a Toyota. It's always a fucking Toyota. So he pulls up in his Toyota. He like pulls up ahead of me, gets out of his car and like starts to walk towards me to talk to me. And I'm like, what's about to happen? Why God? Can I live? Am I going to have to like loose Papas and like let him, you know, like I'm just trying to, you always start to plan. Like, how am I going to get out of this if this fool decides he's going to like be crazy right now? So that's Papas behind me. Yeah. So I'm like safety planning and what am I going to do if some shit pops off? Because this motherfucker just got out of his car and is approaching me now. Right. He says to me, and I'm still walking. I don't like stop. I'm just like keep walking and I pick up the pace. Right. I start my speed walking. I start my race walking in that moment. Heel toe, heel toe, heel toe, heel toe. And he goes, hey, I've seen you walking around here before and I tried to catch up with you, but you were walking too fast, so I couldn't catch you. Bitch. He couldn't catch me. He couldn't catch me. In that moment, I had two thoughts. My first thought was, okay, so have I been caught? Like, did he catch me? Like, he caught me. Like, I've been caught, right? Like, what's the next step? Do I have to fight my way out of this? Do I end up in the trunk? Does Papas maul him? These are the only, you know, like, what's about to happen? And the other thought that ran through my mind was stalkers are a lot more transparent, I think, these days. I don't think that they were always as open about their stalking and their rituals and their habits and their observations. So I'm like, this is bizarre. I don't like this. No me gusta. So I'm like, let's go, Papas. We got to get the fuck out of here before we end up in the trunk of this man's car. So I briskly walk away, speed walk, if you will. And this man shouts at me and he's like, do you have a husband or a boyfriend? And I was like, yeah, yes. And I'm just like walking and I'm not even looking at him. I'm not even turning around. And he goes, well, which one? A husband or a boyfriend? Which one is it? And I was like, oh my God, both, both. And they're both murderers. They will both kill you. My husband and my boyfriend are both felons and they murder people. So please stop stalking me. to be a lady girl, it's so fun. So fun, so fun, so fun. In other news, if anyone has any like insight into like the cast of the Mayans, Mayans. If anybody knows the cast of Mayans, like, please hook it up. I would like to date one of them. It doesn't necessarily matter which one, just one of them. So DM me. I'm @Mala_Munoz. They can slide in my DMs. I'll slide in theirs. Make it happen. However it happens, just make it happen. I feel like I just need to be put in the same room. If I'm put in the same room, I'll make it happen. Just get me in the same place, same time, and I'll take it from there. I'll handle the rest. So I want to thank you all for being so sweet and loving and supportive, and I want to read some listener reviews for the show because you guys are really showing up and showing out, and it's a beautiful thing, and I'm proud of these reviews. I'm proud of us. We're doing a great job, you guys, so thank you for being here. So that intro was incredible. I had to listen to it twice. I'm so excited. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate you. I'm excited too. First of all, let me tell you, I'm not a weed smoker, but I have tried it before. This is a good show and it is produced very well. Really dig in the intro and convo. Thank you. Very proud of the production on this show. Scandalous, fun, and honest. This show rules. The host, Mala Munoz, tells some wild stories and does a great job of interviewing her guests. The pace is fast and fun. I love the original theme song. It gives me 90s sitcom vibes. Highly recommend if you want a podcast that is scandalous, sexy, funny, weird, cute, and most importantly, entertaining. Thank you for that comprehensive review. Y'all, this was just what Las Marihuanetas needed, a space to celebrate multidimensional women who love la yerba buena. I'm now waiting patiently every week for my dose of laughter, honesty, and joy. Light up and experience joy. Love that review. Thank you so much for these reviews. These are Apple Podcast reviews, and it really does go a very long way towards getting a show funded, sponsored, so that we can pay our editors, pay ourselves, pay our artists, pay our subscription and hosting fees. Podcasting is very expensive, and weekly shows have weekly expenses. So things like this allow us to like place ads and collab, all that fucking bullshit, so that we can keep this shit going. I just want to be able to talk shit forever, okay, guys? So thank you for writing nice things. Thank you, okay, for enabling me. Feeling hella seen. Real talk as always by Mala. Love the first episode, and the jingle by Crisol is so much fun. Yes, it is. Can't wait to hear more of these episodes. You guys are so sweet. I relate to Mala so much as a bisexual baddie and marihuanera. I am definitely going to be tuning in weekly and watching the YouTube videos. Even though I can't relate 100% on everything, I enjoy Mala's commentary. She's so witty, funny, and overall talented. I usually skip podcast intros and just want to get to the episode, but Crisol knocked it out of the park with the theme song. Excited to continue hearing more because you are so talented and funny and it just comes off natural. Go Mala. Thank you guys so much. Oh my God, you guys are so nice. I cannot stop it. Stop, but please don't stop. My future depends on you guys loving this podcast. So all of my life's work is going into this podcast. This is the culmination of all of my talents and all of my experience and all of my savings. So I hope. So keep listening, friends. All right. As a reminder, save the date. We do, in fact, have the very first, but not the last, Marihuanera listening party and smoke sesh coming up in LA at an undisclosed location in the Arts District, September 24th. This will be extremely limited capacity. We're going to have music. We're going to have a top secret, unreleased episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads that we are going to be listening to. It's a legit listening party. We're going to have cannabis brands there. We're going to have food. We're going to have Latinx vendors. We're going to have POC vendors in the cannabis space. And we're going to have moi doing a little mic work, doing a little crowd work, smoking a little J. You know what I mean? And we're going to have fun and we're going to chill. And it's going to be a cool ass event, undisclosed location. I know where it is. I did a walkthrough of it today. It's sick. It's so cute. Oh my God. You're going to love it. I'm not going to tell you guys. It's going to be one of those things where it's like, you get a ticket, you are on the list. It's limited capacity because it's COVID safe and it's a small outdoor venue. You know what I mean? So we're keeping it small, we're keeping it intimate, but we're also keeping it COVID safe. So it's really not that many tickets. But it's one of those things where you get your ticket and you will be given the address like the morning of or the night before. You know, we're not trying to blow up the spot. We're trying to keep it low key and kind of, you know, we're trying to keep it kind of low. again, COVID safety, we cannot have tons of people coming through. And sometimes tons of people come through. So this is how you can ensure that you get a ticket and that you are there for our very first listening party and smoke sesh. Again, I'm going to be recording a super special, super fun episode of Marihuaneta, a podcast for potheads. It will not be on the RSS feed. It will not be online. It will not be on any of the podcast platforms. It will not be on Patreon. It will not be on YouTube. It will only be accessible to folks who attend this event in person and who want to light up and tune in and then just eat and listen to music and dance and have fun and then have a party, you know? So that's what this event is going to be. We hope to do more in the future and you'll hear more about that. We'll keep you updated. So the way that you can get a ticket, the way that you can attend this event and future events, you need to sign up for our newsletter. Go to locatoraradio.com. locatoraradio.com and sign up for Besitos, our newsletter. Our newsletter recipients are going to be the first ones to know when our ticket portal is open. You guys are going to be the have first dibs. You're going to be the first to know. So if you sign up, you're going to have a jump on the general public. By the time it hits Instagram, this event might be sold out. You know what I mean? So you want to be on the newsletter list. You want to subscribe to the newsletter. locatoraradio.com. Sign up for Besitos. And that way you know exactly when it drops, you can get yours. You can also become a patron on the Locatora Productions Patreon. And starting at the $5 a month or above tier, you get the $5 tier incentives. Plus, you will also get even further first dibs into tickets. The patrons know even before the newsletter recipients, right? And then the Instagram and social media folks just are the last people to know about things. So if you're on Patreon, you're going to know first, and very first dibs. If you're newsletter, you're going to have, you know, also a jump. You're going to know after the Patreon people, and then it all goes on Instagram. So that's how you can get a ticket. We want our events to be COVID safe, limited capacity, outdoors, vaccination required, all that good stuff. All right, Marihuaneta, some of you let me know that you tried to use our Mota Glass affiliate code. It should be working. It should be in working order. We see that folks have been using it and folks have been making purchases, and we fucking love that. Mota Glass is Latina and veteran owned. It is a glass company. They make gorgeous bongs and other glass pieces for smoking mota. And we love that and we support. I love my Mota Glass beaker. I have like the big ass one. I don't know. It's 24 inches. I have the big one. I have the huge one. And I love it. And it's such a good smoke. And the glass is so thick. It's like indestructible. And I need that because I'm a monster. So if you want your own Mota Glass bong, support a Latina owned bong company. I think that's really fucking cool. If you ask me, I think it's really fucking cool. Shout out Susie Greens, founder, CEO, genius behind Mota Glass, and use our Marihuaneta affiliate code for a discount off of your next purchase at Mota Glass. Our affiliate code is Marihuaneta P4P. That's Marihuaneta, the letter P, the number 4, the letter P. Marihuaneta P4P at mota-glass.com for your next purchase. You can also head to my Instagram at @mala_muñoz and hit the link in my bio for affiliate code links and all that good stuff. Marihuaneras, you are in for a real treat. I am in conversation with Rue Johnson. Rue Johnson is a cannabis and music industry brand operative at Rue Black Consulting, the project management division of the Penthouse Agency. Her work focuses on using the elements of creativity, beauty, and fire to wreck the perspective of the status quo. She believes in prohibition and dismantling the war on drugs while making whole those most impacted through advocacy and campaign development. A nail polish enthusiast, Rue enjoys sunrises, beaches, cool water, smoking weed, and sleeping on soft sheets. Rue Johnson, the perfect Rue. We have been following each other on Twitter and the socials for some time now. Mutuals, some would say.
Yes.
And we haven't even really spoken or interacted that much, but I know the vibes are there and the vibes are really real. And so that's why this interview is so exciting today.
I feel so excited about it. And yeah, we've been following each other for so long that I think I was like following you when you first got on Twitter, and then you like went away from Twitter, I think, for a minute.
Yes.
And then
yes.
came back. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, she's back. Like, whatever this woman is putting out into the world, I want a part of it. So yeah, we've been down forever, 100%.
Yeah, very true. I had to go be a teacher for a little bit. So I just couldn't.
Couldn't be talking cash shit on the internet because
an educator.
Yeah, that's really funny. Totally understand that.
You get it. You get it. And so you do so much. You do a lot, from music journalism, your work in the cannabis industry, the way you mesh the two together. I mean, I just want to start from the beginning and ask you, how did your relationship with weed begin?
It's funny because when we think about sometimes like things that happen in our very, very early lives, and then we think about who we are now, like as like grown people, there are these little clues that kind of make you think like, wow, I'm like really meant to be here. So my parent, I guess one of my first interactions with weed is because my parents smoked weed. We're Jamaican, and that kind of like West Indian Dominican culture, like it's not surprising that they smoked weed. But I remember being probably sounds terrible, but I had a pretty good upbringing. So I'm not trying to like say my parents were like on some wild shit, but they kind of were. I think I was like seven. Mm-hmm. And I remember putting my hand in a bag of chips and coming up with like a handful of weed, you know.
Weed in the chips.
And I was like, what is this? You know, so that's like one of my earliest memories. And my dad used to call it car wax. That was like their like little like insider, you know? And so he would be like, oh, I'm going to go wax the car. And I guess like now I'm grown, you know, I'm like, oh, he was hot boxing the car. Like he was smoking weed in the car, you know?
I love it.
While we were all in the house. So that's like some of my earliest memories of just, you know, always having cannabis being around, you know?
I appreciate you sharing this story because folks have DM'd and commented about, you know, not all of us experience cannabis stigma in our families. Like there's plenty of us that we've smoked with our parents smoked around us, you know, and smoking can mean a lot of different things. Yeah. I grew up with my dad smoking cigarettes like my entire life. Benson and Hedges menthol lights. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Oh my God. And his phrase was, I'm going to go watch the neighborhood. I'm going on neighborhood watch, because he would go outside to go smoke.
Oh, that is so funny that he's like, I'm going to go on a safety meeting by myself. Be right back. Make sure everything is good in the neighborhood.
Exactly. Yeah. So I love that they all have these phrases.
Yes. Yes.
This is what I'm going to go do now.
Yeah. Like this is where you can find me. And it really means something else, even though you might know what I'm doing. And like, I wasn't smoking weed as like a teenager and stuff. And I think that a big part of that was like that I was like kind of a little bit of like, you know, an actress and like dramatic and like all of that. So I wasn't smoking weed because I was like definitely wild enough. You know, I was like definitely crazy enough. But when I went to college, that was when I like, probably when I was like my first year in college, I was like 18. By the time I came home from college on my first summer, I was smoking heavy. You know, I was like on my own, doing my own thing. And I had like figured out like, you know, the kind of weed I like to smoke. And you know, back then, obviously we were all smoking like, you know, Bobby Brown, brick weed. Like,
whatever was around, whatever there was.
Whatever was there, you know. When I moved to Colorado, that's when I became like a stoner, you know, in a good way, you know, the only way. The only way to be a stoner is a good way.
I agree completely. Like when I hear a negative connotation around being a stoner and a pothead, it is the rare occasion. I'll say that it doesn't happen that often. Mm-hmm. It tends to be with, you know, I would say older church ladies, they have that negative stigma still, but everybody else that I speak to and that I find myself around, it's like, it's a very positive outlook. And it's like, actually, thank God I'm a stoner. I'm blessed to be a stoner.
Blessed to be a stoner. Cause it's like, okay, I'm going to smoke this herb or the PMS is going to tell me to rip your head off. And then like, what do you want? You know, it could go one way or it could go the other way. One thing like about that kind of connotation that you're talking about, Dr. Rachel Knox, who is like the medical cannabis, like, you know, MD, like head boss bitch in charge. I don't, that's obviously not a formal title, but she is.
It is here. It is here.
Boss. Yeah, she's the boss bitch. But she just said like the other day in some talk she was giving that like all cannabis is medicinal. It can be used recreationally, but all cannabis is medicinal. So that really stuck with me.
And this, I feel like we could tie all this back to the story you shared about cannabis as medicine in your household. How many stories do we need to hear about children getting into their parents' prescription drugs?
Yes. Okay. All kinds. I mean, so many stories about that. And it's like, now you have this like raging opioid addiction and like there's nothing being regulated to prevent that stuff from happening.
No.
You know, but you know, we smoke a little herb and then all of a sudden everyone was acting like we like, you know, stomped on a lobster.
Straight to jail.
Straight to jail. Under the jail. Completely really ridiculous. Like, oh, she stomped on a lobster and she was getting high. Like, please.
No, lock her up.
Lock her up. lock her up.
I think Hillary should have pivoted to weed instead of running for president.
Because honestly,
like come on.
Girl. She's not smoking weed now, seeing like all, I mean, but I think that's like such a common thing that many women go through is that we will like staunch ourselves in some kind of way because we are supposed to have some kind of presence. And then you realize that the assholes in charge and who've been in charge are actually running amok and you should have just been smoking your weed anyway. Like I smoke weed on my Zoom meetings because listen, if you hire me for something, if we're talking about something, I smoke weed. Everybody knows that.
The end.
And I ain't changing it.
No. And who's going to stop me? Who's going to stop me?
Who's really going to check me though?
Literally no one. The other white lady who pivoted to weed and it was successful for her, it was Martha Stewart prison.
So it's so interesting because many people don't remember when Martha Stewart was like on TV, like before she went to jail.
And Martha.
Martha.
Yeah. Like,
Good Morning America, Martha. Like, you know.
Connecticut, Martha.
Connecticut. Okay. Like, bitch. I feel like she was probably obviously smoking weed then.
Oh,
you
know,
like who else is going to tell you the fabric and the thread and the texture of some shit? Like she was getting high, folding her sheets.
Luxuriating with her sheets, her thread count.
Okay. Martha was getting high.
You're right.
And making bomb ass dishes and like basting turkeys and giving them the extra rub down and whatever.
Arts and crafts.
Martha was getting high.
And gardening.
Who knows what she was even growing?
The life I want, honestly.
I know. Me too. Just want to smoke weed and drink good water and like sit outside of somewhere where the sun hits me just right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like where's the job description for that?
I know. And I think that I've heard of like people who want to fund other people's lifestyles, you know? But I think there's a little too much, like, you want photos, you want cute outfits.
Right.
You want on-camera things.
Ugh, it's too much.
Just pay to put me out to pasture.
You know? Like, sit me out on the river. Just, yeah, I mean, that would be such an ideal life. Like, you know, I definitely think that working girls, you know, especially women in any industry, that there is like a high level of you know sexual power that exists in the dynamic, right? And especially in the cannabis industry, you know, like there'll be like a lot of brands feel like, oh, well, the best way to make this work is to just like put a sexy girl on it. Like that's what they used to you know, be able to do, right? Like back in before, like so many of these amendments were passed. And now these sexy girls are like, well, actually going to give me the weed for free and my flights and all the rest of it. And then that's how we're, and so I'm like, women, working girls, let us all take our power back and like keep our pay links available.
100% keep the links in the bio. They keep trying to take our links away from us. I will fight to the death for my fucking links.
Fight for it.
Give me links or give me death. Give me bookings or give me death.
Yeah, like book me, pay me. Maybe you need stickers.
I like that. I like that. No, but you bring up a really interesting conversation, which is women in the cannabis industry, whether we're working online and I'm like just barely just finding my way in. I'm trying to break in. That's what I'm trying to do.
Period.
Let it be known. This podcast, I'm trying to weasel my way into the cannabis industry.
Let's go.
So that being said, you talked about where your relationship with weed began at home. How did you turn it into a professional relationship?
I was always taught I have certain skills and I guess like, you know, a talent. And so when you have a skill, and I think the talent is in understanding your skill, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
Right. So I love music. Right. And I was writing about music and booking shows and doing festivals and all these other things. Like I had already kind of figured out the trajectory of my career living in Colorado when Amendment 64 passed. Cannabis like started and it just inched its way into the music industry because brands were like funding concerts or, you know, 420 celebrations. Like it just really brought the economy of the music industry way, 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 way up. And I like to smoke good weed and I like to go to concerts and I love music. And so I started seeing the way those connections were being made. And I was able to bring my talents of understanding branding and communication and messaging to cannabis brands that wanted in the music industry. And then I started working with all my music industry connections to explain that cannabis and the music industry are like first cousins. They're not brother and sister because there are things that you do with your first cousin that you don't do with your brother.
Right. Fair. Right.
they weren't playing nice all the time. Like corporate suits were like, oh, people are getting high at the shows and whatever. That used to be taboo, you know? Mm-hmm. They used to like get afraid when the Wu-Tang Clan was coming to town because of the weed they were smoking.
And right? Like artists, well, I feel like Black artists, hip hop artists in particular, you hear these stories about them, their tour buses being raided and searched and they found weed or they didn't, or they were looking for weed or, you know, somehow
they smelled weed, so they searched it and found a gun. That's how Lil Wayne went to jail, right? Mm-mm. The stigma, that's what we're talking about. And hip hop artists and specifically. So it was interesting to see how that was all working out. And then I just used my skills and being able to speak to multiple communities and bring people together and move them towards a general goal. And I've been lucky enough to connect with a lot of cannabis brands that do want to reduce the stigma. They also want to repair the damage done to communities based on the war on drugs, you know, and those are the kind of brands that I want to work with. And so luckily they have been very amiable to my ideas. And so I've been able to do a lot of marketing and creative development, similar things to what I was doing in the music industry, just for cannabis. And now it's like so dope because I can talk about like my smoking openly. It's a part of my conversation now, you know?
Yeah, I am so excited by this conversation because I feel like a lot of women in particular out there who either are already smoking or have an interest in cannabis, maybe don't know where to start as far as like how to find their place and how to make money or find a job or become whatever it is they want to do within cannabis. And it's just cool to hear about it coming from a place of like, these are your interests. This is what you like, you know? So where do we go from here?
Yeah. And I think it's so important you brought that up because so much of my work now, especially, is about showing the like what I got booked for this gig to do a presentation for a very corporate company, right? A very corporate, I mean, suited up, like whatever. And they reached out to me and they reached out to me because they said they wanted the quote, sexy side of a cannabis presentation. So at first I was like, huh. Okay, I have been kind of cute on the internet lately, right? So I'm like,
So not shocked.
Not shocked, right? Like, but what they were getting at is they wanted the flavor. They wanted the energy of someone who works in cannabis, but who doesn't, I don't touch the plant. I don't grow. Like, I'm way, way down on the supply chain. Like, people come to me when it's time to sell, when it's time to like distribute, you know, I don't cultivate. And so I really think that a lot of women in particular, they don't see that one, it costs astronomical amount of dollars to do things like open a dispensary or a delivery service or something. So that kind of pushes sometimes women out from even trying, because we know that the capital dollars typically go to the like soft shoe khaki wearing dudes, you know, who do their thing. But I want more women especially to see that like our place in this industry is wherever you want it to be, because there's so many parts of it. Wherever you fit in, whatever you do, there is a place for that.
Yeah, 100%. And I find myself like now as I learn more, I find myself like getting excited and telling other people like, oh my God, do you guys realize like how much is going on in cannabis and how much money there is? Because at the top of this interview, I started to share with you, and I want to share with our listeners, with our marihuanetas at home, because I think it's fascinating. And I think that folks like to hear like the journey and how things progress and, you know, where we start at, you know, episode 5 versus this will be episode 5 versus episode 100, you know, and like really like following along. So for everyone listening at home and Rue, because I'm just dying to share this with you.
I'm so excited.
Even before our first episode launched, we had multiple cannabis brands in the DMs, emailing us, reaching out. We want to sponsor per episode, per month. We want to sponsor events. We want to send you products. Just tell us your rate and then we'll pay you and then we'll get started. And I mean, like, love just that. straight to it.
Love that. Yes. Pay links in the bio.
give me links or give me death.
Links or give me death.
As we have established, you know, and here is my deal. As creatives in the podcasting space, we have been banging our heads up against brick walls, trying to get people to see us and hire us and fund us and believe in the work. And the podcasting industry itself has cost us more money than it has made us. Even just negotiating contracts for a potential network gig costs money, because you have to have attorneys.
Have to.
We've made not one red cent in podcasting, not one. And here, all of a sudden, we have over 100 episodes for Locatora since 2016, and these fools refuse to pay us. I don't even put out my first cannabis podcast episode, and the cannabis industry, they're ready, they're waiting, they're dying to pay us.
Because, Rue, what is that? Because that's the example of what I just said, right?
Yep, obviously,
like what you do with the Locatoras, right, is like, fly, and we love it because it speaks to us on a cultural level, on a homegirl level, on a like, oh, I know someone, you know, who feels this way kind of level. So you've already shown and proved that's also about the confidence coming into the cannabis industry. Like, you ain't gotta, you know, pay your dues or whatever, because you have like 100 episodes of some fly shit, multiple pages of you like talking shit on the internet that is fly and listenable. So it's like, yeah, you're bringing your best self. And so they already know what to expect. That's about like consistency, reputation, and a willingness for people to take a risk on you, because you're taking a risk on yourself, you know, by tapping into this industry and by creating a space for other people to tap into the industry too. Because eventually they have to give us what we want, because there's enough of us, there's more of us than there are of them, you know?
Right.
They want access to all the cool shit and people we know about, because we're brown and we're fun and we're beautiful and all of that. Yeah. And we want their American dollars. I'll accept euros too. You know what I'm saying?
You know, oh, I'll definitely accept euros. 100. I prefer euros, actually.
Yeah, it's a higher currency for sure. I prefer euros. Yes.
We may need to start accepting only euros, depending on how things are going here.
I know the world is like, as of this listening, like it's burning, you know?
It's really burning as of this recording. Things are on fire. Want to know a little more about like your kind of schemes and goals and hopes and dreams for yourself, whether that be in cannabis or not. Because I just think you're so brilliant and interesting. And as much as I'm interested in your accomplishments, I want to know, like, what are you like? What are you manifesting?
Manifesting. All right. So I'm manifesting like a very, very, very large music festival that connects cannabis and that has some sort of additional social justice component, probably like something like expungement, you know. I am manifesting like the work of that to look like everything that I, and it's crazy because like, I don't really talk about that particular part of the vision so much because it's so huge that like sometimes those steps are too big, but then like something will happen and then I'm like, wow, this is a step towards like this massive like cannabis music festival. And that in itself is not a unique idea. There are cannabis music festivals that exist, but not mine, you know, my own, like,
yeah, yours,
my own space, my own thing, my own vision of like what it would look like. So that's one big thing that I'm manifesting, and I see it kind of happening the way it's supposed to.
I love that idea. Because although you're right, there are music festivals, I've never been interested necessarily in going to one.
Right.
You know, I would want to see one that I would want to see the one that you put together.
Yes. For us, like something that's like interesting, because I see a lot of stuff, but I'm like, that's not making me want to leave my house right now. You know what I'm saying? That's me. Like, I'm like, okay, so I could leave my house and go to like someone's event that I may or may not really enjoy, or I could like wait here for my dick appointment. Can I say
Like, absolutely. You can say whatever you want.
I can wait here for my dick appointment. I can like smoke weed and wait until he gets here, you know? So
right.
It's like, that's the kind of lifestyle that I'm building right now. Like I'm really on an active movement towards like joy and happiness and like inclusiveness. And for me, that is one big thing that I really, really want to accomplish for myself and for, I think, what all of this shit is for. Like it would be crazy to not do something like that when all my experience is in like creating an experience that involves music and cannabis.
Yeah. Yeah. And something, you know, I don't know, Solange immediately comes to mind. Just,
Okay. I'm like, channel for me right now, Mala. Channel it. Just
right away. Beyonce's talking about CBD in the press.
Can I tell you the craziest shit right now? Listen to me.
Tell me.
This is why I'm telling you, this is like you're channeling. All right, someone, a very professional contact, very high level guy, hit me up the other day. Something, he knows someone who wants to meet me, whatever. I was like, here, give him my email. And he was like, oh, are you still working with the queen? And I was like, I am the queen, as a joke. I was just like, I'm the queen. Like, what do you mean? And he was like, no, yes, of course you're the queen, but I heard that you've been working with Beyonce. Mala, what? I was like, that's a rumor that's going on about you guys heard that I was working with Beyonce?
That's a good ass rumor.
I love that rumor.
If there's going to be a rumor, let it literally be that.
Let it literally be that. And so you just said right now, Solange, and look at your face. I know.
For the listeners at home, I'm just, yeah.
Aghast.
Aghast, literally.
I know. So you just brought that, you just channeled that in. So Beyonce, ready.
I totally see it. There's no question. There's no doubt, because she would love to back a cannabis music festival for women.
100%. Like maybe on her honey farm or what? Like,
oh my God, help me. It's Mecca. Like
that's where it's like, yes, the promised land. Like that's where it is, you know, somewhere off in the canyons of California, wherever, like, you know what I'm
wherever,
saying?
Wherever she is, wherever it is.
Wherever, we'll go there.
We will follow.
We'll find our way to the hive, yes, yes. We will follow.
Always. Oh my God.
Yeah, I actually got the vibe off that, so.
This is good.
Yeah, 5 years from now, we're gonna be like, yo.
And you never know what happens when and who's looking and watching and listening and talking clearly. Isn't it wild how like people are talking about you. And I feel like a lot of times I know I get insecure or like, are people talking about me in a bad way? But yeah. Often it is in a good way.
Yeah. Or in ways that are just like unfathomable. Like I don't, you know, that's a weird thing in the industry. People think you have to like network a lot and like be wheeling and dealing all the time. And I'm not really like that. I'm more like personable on that kind of level, just with people. Like, I'm not ever going to be like, oh, here's my business card. It's like, no, if you want to find Rue Johnson, somebody's going to tell you how. Like, if you think that there's something that I need to do, like, we will find each other. Mm-hmm. And so that the fact that that kind of conversation was just happening at all is so crazy, because I'm like, wait, you're one, a very professional contact, too. Like, you know me in real life. So you were just this whole time thinking I'm working with Beyonce. Like, who knows? Like, who knows what people are saying about you? You never know.
And why? Because it could be, because a game of telephone, right? Mm-hmm. It could be like somebody was like, oh, Beyonce wants to work with.
right.
And it turns into, oh, she's already working with her. Like,
right. It could be anything. And like, not trying to be crazy, I'm not trying to get us like into a tizzy, but I'm not that many degrees away from, like, it's not impossible that, like, you know. And I only say that not because I'm like making my head big, but I'm just saying that because that's how crazy the world is.
Oh, that's how crazy the world is. Wild
magic is, you know. So who knows?
No, I see it. I 100% see it. Let's just you know. Yeah. Just bring it in, bring it in. Whew, wow.
I know, that was a hot moment. I wasn't
expecting
that at all.
That was a hot moment. I'm coming down a little bit. Yeah. I'm settling in. No, I mean, while we're manifesting, tell me if this is a ridiculous idea. Okay. But Marihuanera, I want to pitch to Cheech Marin. Like, what if they had a niece who was a Marihuanera and a podcaster? And we reprised the franchise.
Okay.
Because I think that it could work.
Because what's crazy is I also think it could work.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I 100%, they had a niece. That's hilarious.
But I like went to private school and like... It would make sense.
No, that totally makes sense. I actually love it. And again, like, you're probably like 2 degrees away from him, you know?
Right. He's around. He's local.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're in LA, so it's like, and you're like a native, so you really know where it goes down.
For me, I've kind of just been waiting on like pulling the trigger kind of a thing. I want to feel like tell me, do you get this way? Do you feel this way? Do you ever wait on moving on something or talking about something or reaching out before you feel like I'm super ready, like a level of readiness? Or are you more like, here's the idea, let's go, boom?
I like to have my ducks in a row. I mean, they don't even have to be in like a perfect row. They could be floating, but I like to have some, you know, I want to have some sort of like, you know, connection to whatever I'm asking that person. But I also think that, you know, being prepared is so important, but also like, you have to still be ready to put yourself out there, even though everything might not be like 100% perfect. Because what if you run into him in the Whole Foods? You know what I mean?
Specifically, which is probably where he is.
Which is obviously where he would be.
Probably, you know? In Pasadena.
Right. You have to be able to be like, okay, well, actually, let's talk over these kumquats or whatever.
I need my pitch ready no matter what.
No matter what. I one time was like I went to see Drake. One of my best friends took me to see Drake for my birthday some years ago and for his residency. And we had all access. We were so close to him that like our elbows were touching. So that night after, I sent him a message on Instagram. And I was like, just so you know, I have this idea for you. When you are ready, it could be however many years from now, here's the idea. And I just left it there. So I don't know. And like, that is something that like, I have an idea for, and he's not done. And I was like, this is the thing that I want to do with you whenever you're ready. So like, when I run into Drake again, I'm gonna be like, check with him. Like, look, I sent you this message.
Yes, but you planted the seed.
Planted the seed. That's all we got to do. So Cheech is coming.
Cheech is coming. I love that story. I think that when we can just share, like, this is a time where I did this. I didn't explode. I didn't die. Yes. I didn't get canceled. Right. Like, nothing bad happened. I did it, and we'll see.
We shall see. I didn't get canceled. Everyone's been getting canceled.
But what do you think of the, here's my, okay. So I have these like, these simultaneous thoughts, right? So of course there's the cancel culture is not real. People still get away with horrible things and make tons of money and don't lose platforms or deals. And if they do, they get new ones or it comes back, whatever it is, right? But then on the other hand, it's like, if the cancel culture isn't real, then why do we keep going on the rampages for people and like somehow trying to justify them when we also acknowledge that no one's actually getting canceled,
right?
And they're not actually being held accountable. I don't know, you know, like it's confusing to me because the behavior still continues.
Yeah. And I think that I think is just honestly like the $64,000 question of humanity, right? Like, are people actually ever like, is discipline a thing? Is punishment a thing? Or do we as society, we're just all not on the same page about what someone's bad behavior entails, you know? So like, there are so many people that quote, like, people were like, oh, they'll never come back from that. Or like, whatever, like Mel Gibson and you know.
Oh, Mel.
Mel, Melly Mel.
Mel.
Mel is a bad.
Yeah, woman. Very, very bad. Like over and over.
Well, and then they, but see, like, it's crazy because then they let that motherfucker go play Jesus, like right after that, you know, like.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How long is cancer culture? I don't know, you know? Like,
so true.
He had those sandals on and everybody was like, no, Gibson.
Loving it. Well, let me say this. Is it possible that it's because he said all those things? They were like, you know what? You make a good Jesus.
Right.
Christians were like, you know what? Yeah, we like you.
You're the one. Like, he's like, you know, Jesus unfiltered. Like, this all the shit Jesus wanted to say when all this shit was going down, you know?
Oh, my God. Now, yeah.
I don't know. People don't really get canceled. Because I think that in general, there's a tendency for people to just move on from things.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, that's why if you're going to do damage, you have to, you know, you have to destroy completely.
Yeah.
And make enough of a noise that if anyone even tries to return, then it's like, wow, that's all rubble. Nothing for us there.
Yeah. 100%. And it's interesting too, because I think we forget, right? Like for a lot of people, the internet is definitely a way of making a living, and having a platform is a way of paying bills. And I think that we have to remember that it's not the only way to make a living, and it's not the only way to pay bills. In fact, it's one of the hardest ways to make a living and pay bills. And you have to really like have people like actively supporting your platform in order to like monetize it to that degree, you know? Mm-hmm. So like if folks are like being harmful and fucked up, like they don't have to be on these platforms.
Right. Right.
They could literally go do literally anything else. There are many careers. There are many things.
Many things.
We don't have to follow them and give them active engagement, which equals dollars. Right, here.
Right. But someone will be doing that in whatever part. That's why it is, you know, we talk, I guess, I'm not trying to bring up Kanye, but Kanye is a really good example of that, you know, like Kanye's was saying all that very wild offensive shit on the internet and was making hella money, you know, like so much money. So there's always going to be a place for people who want to say terrible things to like platform the terrible things they want to say. But then there are also lots of people who don't platform the terrible things that they actively believe in, who are also still making tons and tons of money.
Very much. And then I think there's layers upon layers, right? Because it's also like any content creator doing collabs with major corporations, even if the content creator is social justice oriented and inclusive and all the good things, right? What level of control do we have over who has sponsorship dollars to give and whether or not we mesh with all of their politics?
It's so tricky.
It's very tricky because question, do our indie Black and brown brands and companies necessarily have the sponsorship dollars to really fund our indie creative projects to the degree we need them to be?
I mean, some of them like are still struggling with the capital that they need to even like have their own brands, you know? And it also goes back to the point of like, who's getting money, who's getting access to money, what business resources are out there for people from certain communities. So it still goes back to like, okay, yes, a really great indie Black or brown brand could say, okay, here's like, you know, $50,000 of an investment or something to that effect. But what did that investment in them investing in another Black and brown business, what did that cost them in terms of like bottom line overhead, whatever, you know, return on investment? What stress are they been under to make this Black or brown brand they've invested in produce that dollar amount plus some? It all goes back to the point of like the capitalistic aspect of then what do the trickle down economics look like? So part solution to that is obviously that the corporation should give their money to the indie brands that invested in, you know, whatever.
Right.
And I believe that like there are some companies and projects that I don't, that are very corporate in my life, right?
Sure.
And so because they're so corporate, there are certain lines that they have to sort of toe and like whatever. And the best that I can do in making sure that those corporations have responsibility to the culture is by being who I am solely and completely. Yeah. So that in by their investment in me or their hiring of me or their whatever, that they also are forced to engage with this resistance, you know?
Very much so, very much so. Because it also doesn't make sense to risk your future and your career by partnering with a brand that is like being harmful and doing damage. Like, even though they might be corporate dollars, any indie creator is like accepting corporate dollars at a risk because something could come out about that brand before your project is even released and things take time.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it's, oh my God, these people.
Yes.
It's a risk.
It's a risk, but I think it's like, that's in the vetting too, you know, like that's in the vetting, that's in, you know, having a good team of people around you who are going to be like from jump, like my messaging is not changing. Whatever brand is going to, you know, sponsor or invest in your podcast, from day one, they got to know what's up.
Oh yeah.
Day fucking one. And that's how I feel about my work. Like there are some people who might think that, you know, especially when I was like in my late 20s, I was like always talking real cash shit on the internet. And it's like,
as you said,
just like, you got to know, this is who I am. This is what's going into it. And so like, if that's why you're approaching me, because you think it's fly and awesome, then great. These are my value systems. And I'm still going to say, fuck the police.
My gosh, we have just covered everything.
I was like, okay, we're getting like, Pete, listen.
This is what happens. This is what happens.
All the way around. All the way around. I'm smoking some OG Kush right now. So the Kush just makes me be feeling, you know, all thoughtful and shit. So it's really funny.
Yes. I picked up these pre-rolls that I love, especially when I'm on the go or when I'm like working and doing stuff. And I love them for recording. It's the Candescent Create. It's like a sativa. This is not a paid ad, but manifest, of course.
Yes.
Whatever. Throw it in the RSS feed. Exactly. Show them the numbers.
Yep.
Look, guys, you owe me already.
Person.
Here's an invoice. Here's an invoice. I love a sativa because I'm also one of those people who doesn't necessarily always detect the difference in the strains. But I tend to feel like up and like airy when I have a sativa.
Blue Dream used to be my favorite. And I loved it because especially when I'd have to like write or like do, you know, a lot of that stuff. And then I think that I just kind of gravitated to the OGs recently, especially because it really gives me that kind of like body relaxation that I'm looking for, even if I have to be like on or I'm typing or, you know, I have to listen on a call or something like that. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, at least like, you know, my hips feel limber. Like that's,
that's everything.
Space down here. So it just like pushed me in that direction. So that's what I've been on.
Ah, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your weed preferences, your story, your insight, your perspective, your advice, your brilliance. I've had a hell of a good time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm like really wishing you the like best success because I believe in what you're doing and it's so natural and real and it just elevates the voices of like people like us, you know? So I'm just glad to have been able to be a part of it.
Thank you so much, Rue. I really do appreciate it. Rue Johnson, the perfect Rue. I love you. Thank you for being here.
Love you. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Marihuaneras, now is time to take a moment to thank my Marihuanera patrons on Patreon. You guys are so great because your monthly $10 or $25, we'll get into that in a moment, contribution allows for us to pay our audio editor, to pay our artists, to pay our musicians and our entire team that contribute to the making of Marihuanera, a Locatora production. So that being said, one of the incentives to being a Marihuanera patron is that you get a shout out on every episode of the podcast. So for $10 a month, you get a shout out on the podcast. You get invited to a monthly smoke sesh. You get access to unedited, extended episodes that nobody else gets to hear. The extended episodes of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads, live on Patreon. So you can head over to patreon.com/locatora_radio, pledge at $10 per month. Locamores, if you pledge at $25 a month, the Locamores anonymous tier, you get access to all the Marihuanera incentives, as well as Locas por Libros, as well as the Locatora radio tier. See, now every single Locatora production property has its own tier on Patreon. I want to thank our patrons, starting with Gerardo, Alejandra, Ollie, Chelsea, Daniela, Jeanette, Ruthie, Christian, Crisol, Madison, Samuel, Yvonne, Carla, Magdalena, Jasmine, Bailey, Cristina, Edna, Selena, Avocado Toast, Rosalina, Sirenia, amazing name, Carla, Dan, Ajopi, and Cristina. Thank you all so much for your continued support. If you would like to become a patron, head to patreon.com/locatora_radio. Thank you for lighting up and tuning in to Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. I'm your host, Mala Munoz. Please visit locatoraradio.com to learn more about us and Locatora Productions. Follow us across social media. I'm at Mala_Munoz. You can also follow us at Locatora_radio. Thank you so much for lighting up and tuning in. Our audio editor is Stephanie Franco. Our Marihuanera jingle is by Crisol Lomeli. Marihuanera logo art is done by the incredible Micah Amaro. This episode written and hosted by me, Mala. Thank you for joining us. This has been a Locatora production.